Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. This show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, visit exomountaingear.com. Hey, so before we dive right into this show and learn more about the topic today, I wanted to tell you really quick about a cool opportunity that we're launching, a giveaway, a chance for you to win some great prizes. So go to exomountaingear.com/inmyexo to learn more about everything that's up for grabs and how you can enter. It's super simple. The gist is this: we want to see what's in your pack. We want to hear about the unique gear items that you carry. Maybe what's different, what's special, what's your favorite. Just tell us about it. You can go get all the details, again, at exomountaingear.com/inmyexo. And there's prizes. So we're going to give away an Exo Mountain Gear gift card, some apparel from First Light, a custom Exo Mountain Gear Benchmade knife, a quilt from Katabatic Gear, and more. So there's great prizes up for grabs. Go learn more. Go get entered. exomountaingear.com/inmyexo. Speaking of what's in a pack, in this episode, we speak with Chad from Backcountry Rookies as he heads into his first backcountry elk hunt, and we really debrief his gear list for this hunt. So Steve and I go line by line, item by item, ask some questions and make some suggestions, and find some areas where Chad can cut some weight without sacrificing any comfort, and also ensuring that he still has everything he needs for this hunt. So this is a helpful debrief where maybe you can learn a few things or get a new perspective or just have the confidence that you can leave some items out of your pack and you'll be okay. This isn't, again, just about hitting some number. It's not about having the lightest pack so you can just say, hey, I'm light. That's great. What this is really about is saving weight so that you can hunt more comfortably, more efficiently, and ultimately be more effective on your backcountry hunts. Hope you enjoy this episode. As always, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, shoot us an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. And also, don't forget, let's see what's in your pack. Head to exomountaingear.com/inmyexo. Okay, here's this gear debrief with Chad. Chad, welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast. Thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, thanks. Cool to be here. I've been a longtime listener, so it's pretty cool to be on the other side of it.
Yeah, and you've been on the other side of some podcasts doing some hosting too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So just kind of starting up a new podcast right now. Very similar to what you guys have, but kind of starting it over again from the beginning. You know, it's called Rookies in the Backcountry, and it's focused primarily on the guys that are just starting out and thinking about that Western hunt and how we're going to do it and how they're going to get out there and do it. So,
yeah. So what's your story and kind of where are you at in that process?
I've been a hunter for, well, I say my life, but there was a big gap there so I hunted a little bit when I was a kid, squirrels and rabbits and a little bit of deer here and there. Grew up in Indiana, so mostly whitetail, and of course then off to college, and you know, just life gets in the way, and I joined the military, so that takes up a lot of time, and I kind of got away from the hunting world. And then fast forward a little bit, ended up in Texas and kind of continued hunting in Texas. So I hunt in down here, or in Texas, I hunt pigs and some whitetail, some mule deer. That's about it for down here. I got pretty lucky a few years back and stumbled on an Awdad sheep hunt that was pretty cool. And a buffalo hunt that was pretty neat too. So not a free range buffalo, of course, it was a ranch buffalo, but still pretty awesome to encounter that creature. That's a big beast. So, and then to kind of get into where did the podcast come from, that was, so last year I was deployed and just kind of bored and thinking like, what did I want to hunt this? Well, it would have been, you know, upcoming years, I guess. And, most of my hunting is like truck hunting in Texas, you know, driving around in the pickup truck, looking for animals and, you know, shooting off the hood of the truck. And although that's fun and it packs the freezer full of meat, it's kind of, I don't know, it's not adventurous like I was looking for. So while I was deployed last year, I just was watching some YouTube videos, whatever. I think a lot of Randy Newberg and stuff like that. And I decided that true adventure would be to get out west and hike in the mountains and just really enjoy a hunt. So that's where the idea of the elk hunt came from. And then the idea of the podcast came from Steve, who was the co-host of my Rookies in the Backcountry show. We were going to hunt together, and due to some scheduling stuff, we were not going to be able to hunt together this year. But he kept, you know, I just wanted to go out and do the adventure and sit on the top of a mountain and drink coffee and glass for animals and hopefully be able to take something, you know. And Steve kept saying, well, let's videotape it and do YouTube and all this other stuff. And that idea of that podcast just sort of just came out of that, thinking if we're gonna learn how to do this, and if this is our first year and we have no idea what we're doing, maybe we should talk to some people that do know what they're doing and educate ourselves. And then it just kind of rolled into, well, if we're teaching ourselves, we might as well try to teach other people. So that's kind of where the idea of the Rookies in the Backcountry came from.
Yeah, it's always good when you're learning, getting good information to share it, you know, and that's exactly what you guys are doing. So that's awesome. Where you headed? What state you headed to for elk this fall?
So we're going to be in southern Colorado.
Okay.
Southern, kind of central southern Colorado. We're looking to, I mean, you know, like I said, this is first year, so we'll see. It's going to be early archery, so we'll be out in September, mid-September. I think the dates are 17 through 22 is what we're looking at.
Okay.
And, archery, elk, so.
Are there any reasons you chose that portion of the archery season, or was it just like a scheduling deal, or is it strategic?
Scheduling, mostly. We got pretty lucky in just knowing that time of, like, that portion of the year when we're going out there, it's going to be like just before or to the beginning of the rut. The moon phase looks right. So it worked out for both reasons, strategically and scheduling purposes. It wasn't like, as far as scheduling goes, it wasn't just that's when we absolutely have to go. It was just kind of, you know, that's what we talked about and that's where we landed on. So I think hopefully it works out, you know. If not, then if anything, we take away experience and instead of a cooler full of meat, but, you know, either way, if we come out, we're going to be successful in one way or another.
Yeah, for sure. How did you choose, your unit? And I don't care what your unit is, but, you know, as we have this conversation and push this out there, there's other guys in the same situation as you who may be planning their first hunt, or they've done a couple hunts, but they're still trying to figure out when and where to go and all that. So I'm just curious from your perspective, blank slate, totally new, what went into that decision for you in terms of Colorado's a big state, plenty of opportunity. Where did you land? Why?
I threw a dart at a map. No, not really. Not really, but honestly, I could have.
It's kind of a valid strategy to some extent. If you like block off a few areas in Colorado, there's a lot of darts that could hit and land well.
Yeah. I did a lot of stuff on Onyx Maps and Go Hunt. I was in, you know, those two apps. So those were really, really helpful. And then Google Earth, you can download some map layers that have migration corridors and things like that. So I was kind of able to just bring all those tools together and locate a unit that I liked. And then within that unit, I, of course, Corey Jacobson's Elk Hunting University or University of Elk Hunting, went through that thing and kind of used some of his scouting techniques and picked out an area that I liked. So, but yeah, Go Hunt and Onyx were both really, really helpful tools as far as Onyx with their, you know, burn and wildfire layers and things like that. And then Go Hunt just breaks down every unit perfectly. So, yeah, I use those tools to learn a little bit about the areas.
There's a, you know, you can kind of prioritize certain things like A, terrain, B, access, and then also, you know, basically getting away from people. You know, it's which side of access do you want? Do you want it easy to access or hard to access, to get away from people? And then you can balance, you know, trophy opportunity versus shot opportunity in terms of higher densities of elk. Did you weigh those things in lean one way or the other, or you're just overall looking for good elk areas across the board? Or was there like a certain, I'm prioritizing, you know, hard to access to get away from crowds or easy to access so I can move around more? Like any of those decisions play into that?
Yeah. So access did for sure. Every place that we're looking at is about anywhere from 3 to 4 miles away from any roads, or, I mean, there's some trails out in there, hiking trails and stuff, but we wanted to try to get away from the, you know, busy highways and the main roads. Trophy potential, not so much. I don't really care if I bring out a 350 class bull or a elk or a cow elk, you know, it doesn't really matter to me, either one. I just, want to have that opportunity, shot opportunity. So, yeah, access, I think, would probably be the biggest factor that we took in. And that's, I was kind of surprised at how hard it is to find areas that aren't traveled. You know, there's a lot of roads out there. So, you know, digging in, and you just kind of, you know, you got to do that method of looking and just like creating paths and stuff on Google Earth so that you can see how far you are away from those main roads or even the secondary access roads. But yeah, I was a little bit surprised at if you're trying to go 5 miles in somewhere, that's hard to do.
It reminds me of, we hunted Colorado last year for elk, and I had picked this place out on a map and literally like hiked like 4 miles cross country. And then all of a sudden we're standing on a road. And I was like, what the hell? Like, I was so pissed off. I thought we were hiking into this awesome basin, and somehow there's a road on the map that or it wasn't on the map, but it was freaking there. So it must have been an old map. And that was, it's frustrating. It's really hard to get away from roads sometimes.
Yeah, and that was part of the problem. And then, so another thing, luckily I switched from to the unit that we're going to hunt now. So I had scouted out 3 different units that I liked, and one of those units, I had this spot that I thought was going to be, you know, I thought it looked good to me or whatever. And that is actually the spot where I wanted to hunt. The canyon was right in the middle of the wildfire that was burning north of Durango in unit 74. So luckily we got away from that one. Otherwise we would have been having to re-scout a new area anyway. So yeah. But that would have been pretty bad. Maybe in a few years that'll be a good area after that starts to rebuild. But
right,
we'll see. Yeah.
So what is the kind of logistically the plan for the hunt? How much time do you have? How are you looking at pulling it off? Meaning, are you hunting with camp on your back each day? Are you packing in and setting up camp 4 miles or however far away from the truck and then hunting from there? What do the logistics look like of the plan?
We were actually just talking about that yesterday, me and my hunting partner. So I think what we're going to do is hike in, spend a couple of days, you know, take enough food with us for 3 to 4 days, and then possibly come back out to the truck and kind of refit and, you know, recharge, whatever you want to call it, and then go back in and spend another couple of days. We both have plenty of time off work. I've got 2 weeks. I think my hunting partner has 2 weeks. So plenty of time to do what we want. We're right there in the middle of the season. So actually, I think the season ends on September 23rd. So we have up to 6-7 days where we can hunt if we want to.
Yeah. But, Is the plan B nearby? So if you go in for a few days and you're just flat out not seeing, hearing anything or some other factor, whether it's too many people or have you, do you have like, okay, now we're going to spend the next 3 days over here? Is that all lined out already for you?
Yep. So that's all planned. And the way that the spots that we have picked out is you hike, say, we, you know, park the trucks in the middle, hike south 3 miles. If that doesn't work out, then there's another spot that's 3 miles north of the trucks. So everything, the plan A and plan B are both within hiking distance of where we're going to park. I have a plan C, but that one is going to be packing up and driving out and moving to another area totally. So kind of hoping A or B work out.
Yeah, I was going to say plan. I would also have a plan, that plan C, that's something that's 10 miles or 20 miles away. Because oftentimes we'll be hunting and for whatever reason, like in a certain area, the elk aren't, maybe they're there, but they're not really talking. And then, yeah, you drive 10 miles down the road and they could just be screaming and could be an awesome hunt. So if you had plan A and B too close together, I'd be a little leery of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, those are about 6 miles apart, plan A and plan B. And then plan C is, I want to say it's about 10 miles down the road. So, okay. And then that one's a pretty far hike too. So, I mean, that we'll see. And in 7 days, I don't know that we'll be able to determine that we need to get to plan C, but it's there if we need it, you know?
So camp's going to be 3-ish miles from the truck.
Yeah, okay. Roughly.
And then do you have limits on how far away from camp you might kill an elk?
No, not really. I would say 3 to 5 would probably be a limit if I'm just putting a number on it. I'm in pretty good shape. I'm military guy, so putting weight on my back isn't really a big deal. I've done that for 16 years now. So, I don't mind hiking. I don't mind carrying weight. My hunting partner is also in pretty good shape. I think we'll be okay if we got to hike quite a bit. Now, I say that, but I've never, you know, walked up the side of a steep canyon at 11,000 feet and tried to get out. That's something I've never done for sure. But I do have some, it doesn't bother me to hurt just a little bit. So if we got to hurt a little, we'll do it.
Let's see. What type of elevation will you be at? You just mentioned, I think, in passing something about 11,000. Is that what you're looking at? Or do you know that kind of that number, maybe where camp's going to be?
Oh, yeah. So the truck, when we park the trucks, they'll be down at around, I think it's 8 to 8,500 feet. And then, just looking at the maps and, you know, not actually being there, the spot that I kind of picked out for camp in plan A in that area is, I think it's about 10,500. Mm-hmm. And then we can get up into, I think it's 11,300, something like that. That's about the peak. Okay. Where we'll be at. But I mean, I really don't think we'll be spending a lot of time that high. I think we'll be more in the 9,500 to 10,500 range. Mm-hmm. As far as just hiking and, you know, calling and moving around in the mountains, it should be right around that 10,000 mark.
Gotcha. Cool.
Yeah. Like I said, I've never really been up in that elevation. I mean, I have, but not carrying that much weight. So we'll see. I did a turkey hunt several years ago with some family, and we did that up near Taos, New Mexico, and we were up at around 10,000. So, but we didn't move around near as much as what we're going to be moving around for this elk hunt. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
So part of what we wanted to do in the show, and you had reached out to us kind of about this, was to kind of debrief your gear list, which we'll certainly do. And Steve and I can, you know, give our 2 cents on some of the items within that. But obviously everything we just talked about in terms of when you're going, where you're going, how you're doing it, you know, the timeline that you have to work with, that all influences gear decisions. So I want to make sure we fully understood all that as well. So we'll dive into the gear and then, you know, we can, you know, kind of go through the notes that we have, but at any time, obviously any questions you have, Chad, you can throw at us. So whether that's about gear or about something else, and we'll just kind of continue to see where this conversation takes us. But just starting kind of at the top of your gear list, and maybe this will be something we put up the list and then our notes or something like that with the show. it could be pretty cool. But at the top of the list, you know, you break down your clothing layers. And so you're basically wearing mostly First Light stuff, so like an Arrow wool short sleeve top. Then you have a base layer bottom as well, their wick bottom. There's another half zip long sleeve Arrow wool top. Corrugate pants, so all that's from First Light. You threw in there some, looks like merino wool underwear as well, merino socks, and then your boots. And then we'll get into other clothing items that you have, which you have underpacked. Just something that I did in the beginning was that base layer bottom. I think I packed that around for a year or two and realized that I never really needed it in September. Even when it got pretty dang cold, even in snowstorm type things. And so that's just one thing. I mean, obviously pack it if you want. That's what you feel comfortable with. But I would put that on the list of this will maybe or likely end up getting off of the list in future years. And then I also know that there was another base layer bottom under packed gear. So if you're truly taking two, I would say for sure, absolutely don't take two, just take one. But even the one, I think for most of September stuff, you'll probably find that you might not need that.
Okay. Yeah, good. That's a good note to make, because there's a few things on here that I was kind of thinking, I don't know if I'm really going to need it, or is it just going to be dead weight when I'm packing around? So that's one that I'll put a mark next to and possibly take it out.
Yeah. Do you ever do any sort of base layer bottom in September, Steve?
Yeah, I do. Probably when it's going to definitely be below, I just like to sleep in my long johns. So when it's going to be below 25 in the mornings, I'd say. Roughly September 15th and later, then I'll pack them. I'll just sleep in them and then wear them for the first few hours in the morning. And then, yeah, they just go in the pack. But like I said, it's gotta be cold. And I think everyone's different on their, obviously everyone's different, but just if their legs get cold or constantly warm. So,
yeah.
But yeah, if you got two pairs, that's definitely overkill. I would just go with one for sure.
Okay. And is that, I'm guessing you're talking like up in Idaho where you're getting 25 degree mornings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I've been watching the weather up there in Colorado and looking through, you know, Go Hunt has their yearly weather thing that they track, and I see that it's going to be like mid 60s to 70s, but mm-hmm. I also, that's not at 11,000 feet either, so it could be those 25 degree mornings, I guess. I don't really know for sure.
Yeah, I mean, haven't done 5 years in Colorado, basically all parts of the month except for the very first week of September. It's literally been anything from 20s to darn near 80. Sometimes in the same trip. So, I mean, it really is flip a coin, but I would say it's not completely unreasonable to hit low to mid 20s for sure. You're probably going to have some time below freezing. But then there's also been crazy warm days too. So, yeah, I mean, you know, like those, especially the ones you have listed as wearing, they're the 3/4 bottoms. I mean, maybe that would be good. But yeah, I would for sure probably keep at least an extra pair of bottoms out of the pack from that. And then same way, I noticed with your top layers too, you have the short sleeve air wool top, then you have a half zip long sleeve, and then also a Shama hoodie as well. So that's three kind of merino layers alone. And I would probably get that down to two, however you want to do that. So for me, it's always just been a lightweight long sleeve, and I can push those sleeves up. And then especially that half zip, like you have mentioned, you can open that up big time and really dump some air and ventilate. Or even if you don't want to stick with the short sleeve and then like a midweight, like that would be good. But I think the combination of having three merino layers is a bit much, especially as we get into the other kind of insulation pieces that you might have to go on top of that. So, you know, clothing is one of those areas that's tough, especially until you have some experience of where the heck am I going? What am I going to experience type thing? But yeah, so three merino tops, and then you had a puffy as well as a vest. So personally, I would drop one of the merino layers and get down to two. keep the puffy and then probably drop the vest as well. Again, that's just what I would do or what I have done, and ways where I see you can maybe cut some extras out of there. So yeah, the vest I've never messed with. If I need that type of core insulation, it's just having the puffy on when I need it type thing.
Okay. Yeah. Good point. And that Arrow Wool half zip long sleeve, that thing's killer. So I think mm-hmm. that'll do just fine and get rid of the short sleeve. That thing, it does. You open that zipper up and it really does dump a lot of heat out. So
yeah, between how late that Arrow Wool is, and then be able to vent it with a zip or push those sleeves up if you need to. Yeah, I think the short sleeve is probably would be on my chopping block, and then just run with that Arrow Wool half zip in the Shama. And then maybe dump the vest and then just have the puffy. I just don't see the need for, you know, all of that put together.
And then I'm guessing like later on, if it was a late second rifle season or something, then absolutely have all that stuff for those colder days. But for September, get rid of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, well, yeah, focusing on September, it's overkill. You know, when you get into later rifle stuff, it, again, kind of goes back to what elevation do you think you would be? And even at that point, a little bit more, what's the weather forecast? Because even you still can't make those generalizations. It might be one of those convenience things where you have all this in your bin and you're literally looking at, okay, what's the weather like on this trip? What am I getting into for the next 3 days? And you can make those decisions to add or remove from there. And be smart that way.
Okay. Yeah. And then there also, I'm also planning on just having a stuff in my truck, just leaving a bin and having it in the bed of the truck. And then if it is cold or whatever, and we have to come out, then obviously there's, you know, we have that ability to get them if we need them.
Yeah, I mean, that's perfect. And I would do that same thing with your rain gear. You know, if you know you're only going in for 3 or 3 to 4 days and it happened to look super clear, leave the rain gear in the bin. You know, if the weather chance is only in the second half of the week or vice versa, if the weather chance is in the first half of the week, pack it with you for those few days. But when then you come out, maybe it's an opportunity where you can dump it out of your pack because your final 3 to 4 days of the hunt, you're coming out anyway. And you know, it's going to look much more clear. So I do the same with rain gear in terms of looking at the forecast, and it may or may not make the pack depending on the forecast.
Okay, cool.
And then the other note just on gloves or on clothing was the gloves. You had the Talus Fingros gloves, which are freaking awesome. I love those things. But again, going for September, I don't know that I would pack something like the hybrid, the shell hybrid gloves that you have, or any sort of like soft shell, super full coverage gloves for that. The Talus or some sort of lighter weight merino glove is really good for September and cuts the chill off even when it's pretty chilly. But part of that comes back to your approach. And if you, like, say the weather was going to be super cold for the portion of September you're going to be out there, and you are planning on doing, say, a bunch of glassing, because that's the type of country you'll be in, and we'll get to glassing in a bit, maybe those shale hybrid would make the pack at that point. But at least from what I've experienced, and we don't do a ton of sitting and glassing in the country that we hunt in Colorado, they wouldn't make the pack for me.
Making notes here.
Yeah. Did you have any other thoughts on clothing related stuff there, Steve?
Yeah, no, yeah, I think you hit it spot on, man. Every note I had was basically every note that you hit. Yeah, you have a little too many extras there for sure. And as I said, it's time of year, weather, elevation, duration that you're going to be out, and then just knowing your body. All right, are you just naturally cold all the time, or do you run really hot? And some of that would kind of dictate some of my decisions in there. But yeah, everything Mark said was spot on.
And it's actually a really good benefit that you're doing the 3 or 4 days in and then come out and recharge or what have you, because it gives you an opportunity to maybe overpack a little bit if you want to and then dump stuff, or vice versa. Like I said earlier, if the second half of the week the weather sucks, you can kind of make some adjustments from there. So I think it's a super smart strategy, especially you know, for the first time in, versus going, I'm packing in for 8 days and I'm not coming out, you know?
Yeah. I was gonna say, I think it's a super realistic strategy as well. Yeah. Like I, I would love to know the percentage of guys that say they're going to go in for 8 days that make it only three or four before they go out to get a break, to get a hamburger, stuff like that.
Well, we kind of realized that we've never done this before, and it's, I know that's not easy. You know, I mean, I've been out in camping trips before, and there's some luxuries that are pretty nice to have. And if we keep those at the truck and we do that 2 to 3 days and then come back, and I just, for us, I think that's going to be about the best way to do it, at least for this first year until we get our feet wet with it.
Yeah. That's super smart. Yeah, the boots, obviously those are super personal. I would just say make sure that you've spent some time in them, however possible, off trail, you know, so something like, oh, I'm going to throw 40 pounds in my pack or whatever and go for a hike in my boots, make sure they're good. That's all great. But just keep in mind the terrain that you're doing that in. So in some way, make sure that if you get off trail a bit or start side hilling a bit or just get on super uneven terrain, that those boots don't start killing you. So again, boots are personal. What you have might be phenomenal for your feet, but just try to make sure that you do something other than just walking a relatively groomed trail to put those things to the test.
Yeah, and then same, have a bin or have an extra pair in the truck. You know, even if it's a old pair of tennis shoes, just have something as a backup in case you need it.
Yeah, so I think I've got a pair of older pair of Salomon Speed Cross, and I think those are going to probably stay in the truck just for just extras if I need them or whatever. So boots are really, you're right, they're personal. That was quite a process trying to find the right boots. I went to three or four different stores, tried on probably 15 different pairs of boots, and ultimately landed on what I did. So I'm hoping those are going to work out good. I did just yesterday. I did a little over 6 miles with 50 pounds in my pack and not a single hot spot. Nothing. They're good boots. So
yeah. Perfect.
Yeah.
Just jumping in down the list. You had your kill kit. So you have like an outdoor edge knife with 5 extra blades, paracord, flagging tape, game bags, and then a large trash bag. That's pretty dialed. I think something like the large trash bag is something that could get overlooked. I like those for a whole bunch of reasons. You know, worst case, you have to throw some meat in there, you have to submerge it or something like that. But really for me, something like a large trash bag or some sort of plastic ground sheet is great as you're deboning meat, just to have a place to set it down if you aren't going literally straight into the bag, just to kind of keep that meat clean. But yeah, I mean, overall, your kill kit looks good. Any thoughts there, Steve?
Yeah, everything looked good to me. I was just checking out the game bags you mentioned, but they're not what I was thinking. I was thinking they're like the super cheap Walmart version, and they look a little bit nicer. I thought they were just, really cheap mesh ones that would just kind of completely fall apart on you. But they look like a decent game bag. So yeah, you should be fine. 5 extra blades is probably overkill, 2 or 3, but they weigh nothing. So
are you guys planning on doing gutless, or have you kind of thought about that into things, Jen?
Gutless is, I think that's the way to go. Elk are just so big that it's just, I haven't ever skinned one out, but I think that it's just, I mean, it's not like a little white-tailed deer where you can just throw it around and move it wherever you want to. So I'm anticipating doing the gutless method. Which that'll be, that's new. So that we'll see how that goes.
So you've watched the videos and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, I've watched several, and I mean, it doesn't look like that difficult of a process. In fact, it looks fairly simple compared to gutting, regular like gutting an animal. But yeah, we're gonna try that out and see how it goes.
No, it's always, I mean, it's a huge benefit having two of you as well. Just, you can get the guy to hold the leg versus trying to like tie it off to a tree or something like that. And just, I'll throw this out there because it's something I'm always reminding myself of. That is like, if you get an elk on the ground and you get the knife out, that is probably the most dangerous thing you will do of any backcountry hunt. We always think it's some other thing like taking a fall, and certainly it could be, but getting in a rush or not paying attention, the entire time while breaking something down, especially when you're new to it. Yeah, just slow down. And if it takes you 4 hours, it takes you 4 hours. You'll be fine. You know, just go slow and pay attention. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the plan. Neither one of us I don't think either one of us are going to try to be in a hurry, and we're certainly not going to try to be an expert on anything that we do when we go out there. So be a lot of lessons learned on that, I'm sure.
So sleep system, you have a North Face Talus 2 tents. It looks like a bag from your military service, an army bag there, an REI Airrail sleeping pad, and then a Chill X pillow. Are you and your buddy splitting that Talus 2 tent? Like, you sharing that together, the two of you?
No, so we're each taking a tent. We're both pretty big guys, and just me being in that Talus 2 by myself takes up quite a bit of space. I'm 6'4". So, I don't know what he's taking. I'm not sure yet. I don't even know if he's bought his tent yet. But, so that's just all me on the Talus 2.
Definitely, as you're saying, you don't know what he's taking. Just make sure that he's prepared as well, because if he doesn't have the right tent or the right gear, it can kind of ruin the hunt.
Yeah, he's tracking. We were talking about it all yesterday. We did a little kind of a just catching up. And so he said he may go look at the same tent that I've got, or there's some other smaller, I won't call them lightweight, but maybe like halfway lightweight tent options that he's looking at. So that Talus too, that thing's it's not an ultralight tent by any means. I want to say it weighs about 4.5 to 5 pounds, but I kind of stripped it down a little bit and got rid of all the extra bags that, you know, come the tent, they're the steak bags and the pole bag and all that stuff. And I've got ultra light stakes. So I think I peeled that thing down to about 4 pounds from 5. So not the best. One thing in that sleep system that I definitely will upgrade, it, maybe not this year, but maybe probably next year, is that sleeping bag, that Army sleep system that the Army gives us. It's pretty heavy. They don't try to do anything lightweight. So I don't know what that weighs, but I want to say it's about 4 to 5 pounds. And I think it's rated at like 20, maybe it's 10 degrees rated. I don't remember, but yeah, it's pretty heavy. So
tent and sleeping bag, both, you can shave probably 4 to 5 pounds on those two alone. And that's just, you know, that's budget, right? I mean, you're not going to get out of the gate with everything perfect, but bag, because I know that those Army systems are pretty hefty. And then that tent, you know, being 4.5 pound, that type of range, even sticking with a traditional tent and something that's super spacious for one big dude. Like I'm 6'2", so a little bit shorter, but still big. I have a Nemo Hornet, which is they have a one person. I have the two person version, and it's a legit 2 pound tent with dual entry, dual vestibules, all kinds of stuff. So, you know, if you decide you want to stick with a tent versus something floorless, that the two of you, you know, maybe would split in the future, like myself and my hunting partner have, you know, split a TB style shelter in the past. That can be weight efficient. But if you want something solo, a traditional tent, and plenty spacious for you as a big guy, you know, you can still, with future upgrades, save 2.5 pounds, you know, easy there. So, yeah, you know, it's just something to keep on the list for the future.
Yeah, and I've looked at doing just a tarp or, you know, floorless tent. I've looked at those options, but being this, for the first year, I don't know, there's something some kind of comforting, I guess, about having a floor and, you know, being able to zip it up and close it up. So it's all just growing pains, I think. We'll see.
Yeah.
And that Talus too, I can run that floorless also. So you can take just the rain cover and you can run just the rain cover by itself with the poles. So it has a really a lightweight option. This year I'm just going to take the whole tent and go that route.
Yeah, there's definitely a mental hurdle there when you're not used to it and thinking of, oh, really, floorless and open and creepy crawlies or what have you. I don't know.
Yeah, Well, we'll see. I've slept out under the stars many times, but I just figured it would be comforting to have it. So,
let's see. So you had a section on hunting gear, which covers a whole bunch of things, some things we can dive into. Top of the list there, you had your license and tag and a note about purchasing that over the counter in Colorado. This is certainly fine. I would just make sure not only yourself personally, but anyone who's going to be doing this, make sure that you have everything you need to get that tag. So if the state you're heading into has some sort of, you know, proof of hunter education, anything like that, just make sure that you know exactly what you need to purchase a tag, and you don't get out to Colorado or wherever and go, oh yeah, that's at home, perfect.
Right,
we did that last year. We were on the road to Colorado, realized that you had to have your bow hunter education number, or maybe it's just your hunter education number, but either way, we got lucky as hell and Idaho Fishing Game had that resource online and you could look it up and find it, but it was something I hadn't thought about or been asked in 15 years.
Right.
So definitely, yeah, pay attention to that.
Yeah. I usually buy mine in advance and have it mailed in just because I'm like, okay, I know I have it, you know, a final check in the how, like we're good. But yeah, I mean, you can literally walk into Walmart and do it there. It's really not a big deal as long as you have what you need.
Yeah, I've been emailing with the Colorado Parks and Wildlife. And they, so I guess, I think it's on August the 9th, you can pre-purchase your license. I wasn't aware of that when I made this packing list. So I'm probably going to do that. So I already just have it in my pocket and it's ready to go when I get out there.
Yeah. And on Colorado specifically, one thing you can do, and I've done in the past, is put in at the draw. And whether you put in for points specifically or you're putting in for, you know, hunt that you're not going to draw, the alternate option can be just to get an over-the-counter tag. And so I've done that previously, where I'd basically just put in the draw to get a point, or put in a draw for a unit, and then I don't draw that, and then they just end up sending me an over-the-counter tag. So just keep in mind that that's an option if you guys play the draw game in Colorado as well. Other things look really good. I mean, you know, shooting a Hoyt carbon spider, Black Eagle arrows, looks like you have good weight with those, 485 grains. That's solid setup for elk for sure. One thing that came to mind with your release, which is a handheld release, it's a stand, is just think of managing your process. So, you know, when you're out hunting for multiple days, new country, new animals, everything's new, gear's new, what you have, like, there's just so much going on. It can be super easy to set a handheld release down and walk away, or to drop it and not realize it till later. So either a way to secure that and or a backup release. I've never had issues, but it would be super easy to lose it. And I personally pack an extra release, which kind of drives me nuts because I've never had to touch it. But at the same time, it's kind of nice insurance to have a backup, especially, you know, when you're doing a handheld release and you're not wearing it, or it's not affixed to your bow if you're not wearing it, type thing. So I know that's something even you've wrestled with, Steve, with shooting like a thumb button in the backcountry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I packed it last year, and it's one of the main reasons I'm switching back to a regular index finger wrist strap this year. It was freaking annoying, always having to worry about it and be conscientious of where it was.
Yeah, and that was a switch that I just made earlier this year, I guess, switching over to a handheld release. I had a lot of issues it seems like whenever I swing my finger around on that trigger on that release, it messes up my shot. So I'm just trying something different. And yeah. I have a dummy cord that's attached to that, and then I can cinch it down around my wrist. Okay. So I've got that, and then I'm also taking a backup release too. So
okay, perfect. Yeah, I wouldn't talk you out of a handheld at all. I mean, I definitely continue to use them. That's just the main downside on a hunt like this. You know, is not having it attached, but it sounds like you got that taken care of. So
man, wouldn't that be a bummer to set that down and forget it somewhere?
Yeah, or set it in a pocket and it comes out and you didn't realize it, type thing. But yeah. You have it looks like an Easton Pro Allen set. Certainly packable. The other thing I would just maybe keep in mind, I love having those full hex sets, but what I've also done in the past, at least for pack in hunts, is literally look at my bow and figure out exactly what sizes I need, and then find just the loose little hex keys in those sizes and pack those. Again, you're saving some ounces. It's a little bit nitpicky, but just something that to throw out there instead of packing a bulkier, heavier, full, like all-in-one hex set or Allen set. Maybe just find the individual ones that you need and pack those. But yeah, that's super minor. Under all the hunting gear, you have all of your optics. So I would just think through that again. Hearing what you've said, not caring about trophy quality, being happy with shooting a cow, is the spotter necessary? You know, because unless you're judging trophy quality, even if you're in relatively open terrain, and especially since you're packing super powerful binos, I would probably leave the spotter and the tripod in the truck. So that's the potential to save a whole bunch of weight there, especially given, you know, you don't have particular, like, I'll shoot a 380, but not a 365, you know. hopefully you have that problem.
Definitely not worried about trophy quality. So yeah, that thing has been, I've been tipping either way on that spotter. It's most likely coming out of the bag. So the tripod I may still take though, just to use with the binos, but we'll see. I haven't fully decided on that yet.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, I would not take either on that hunt. You're just probably just not going to use them ever. There's just not going to be, I guess I don't know the country and how open it is, but you'd have to have a lot of open sagebrushy country to maybe justify the tripod. But just sitting down on your butt and bracing your elbows on your knees and glassing, and elk are such big bodied, easy to spot animals that, yeah, I just don't see any reason to pack a spine scope and tripod.
And you got big binos, so they would run well on a tripod. But yeah, I mean, personally, even on the bino side, I would ideally go with a little bit less. You know, you got 12x50s, which I'd probably overkill for that country too. But there's certainly nothing wrong with running them if that's what you got, type thing. But yeah, I even with binos, there's been days upon days where I don't touch them, type thing. So yeah, I would probably leave the spotter and the tripod. It saves you a whole bunch of bulk and weight there.
Yeah, I think that's a, I don't remember total weight on both of those. I want to say it's about 5 to 6 pounds. So
yeah, easy.
That's a lot saved. So yeah.
I mean, if you drop those and drop some of these extra clothing layers, I mean, you're already getting close to 8 pounds, I bet, easy, which is a huge difference. Just looks like you have your knife. I guess that's just like an all-purpose knife, because you also have the outdoor edge in your kill kit, right?
Yeah, it's just kind of an all-purpose deal, chopping wood, whatever, opening food bags or just kind of whatever I need it for.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, besides that, looks like you got your calls, your bugle. I'd look at your power situation a little bit. So you have a solar panel, solar charger, as well as a backup USB type power bank. You know, I'm assuming both of those are for your phone, and then it looks like your headlamp's also rechargeable, and then you also have extra batteries for the headlamp. So it looks like you're maybe a bit overkill on power, especially given that you're going to do 3 or 4 days and come back and then, you know, go back out. I mean, I will pack some sort of extra power, but it looks like there's just a little bit much going on there that you could trim back as well. If you knew for sure, like, that you're only doing 3 or 4 days out, I would probably do no extra power for the phone. So probably no solar panel, no battery backup via USB. And then I would only pack the extra batteries for the headlamp. Just if you're doing basic stuff, like when I'm out there and use my phone, it's in airplane mode, using Onyx Maps for GPS and taking photos, which I do quite a bit of, in 3 to 4 days is no problem. Maybe that depends on your phone as well. but it looks like you have a newer phone. That would be no problem in 3 to 4 days. So for sure, drop one of the two, but maybe even drop both. And then just, you could always top your phone off when, you know, you're back at truck after day three or day four type thing.
Okay. Yeah, that was so we were kind of planning on taking some extra cameras and things like that, but I really think one, even just a USB would probably be enough for the cameras. So that, yeah, that's a good point. That solar charger will stay back.
Yeah, as I said, I'd keep the USB just because if you accidentally forget to put airplane mode on your phone or something, and once that dies, if that is your GPS, I think you could argue that that's worth keeping around. But definitely, in my opinion, I'd ditch the solar charger.
Okay, will do.
Yeah, that's a good point, Steve. Let's see. Under food, obviously that's personal and what you want to bring. I mean, got a lot of the standard stuff in terms of honey stingers and oatmeal and Snickers and Mountain House and jerky and all that good stuff. I didn't see on this list, I'm sure it's obviously it's just an oversight or not on the list yet, but what stove, what type of stove setup are you looking to run?
Oh, yeah, I guess I didn't put that on there. Yeah, I have a Jetboil Flash, I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah, just a Jetboil. Pretty standard, works, you know, works good.
Yeah.
So.
And then again, just given the fact that you're doing a 3 to 4 day thing, I wouldn't pack an extra canister. So just pack the one. You'll be fine. You'll probably be fine all week, but maybe you could just, after your 3 to 4 days, if you wanted to, you could swap it to a new one. Again, just carry one back in, but just a more fresh one. But again, given the length of the hunt and the approach, I wouldn't worry about an extra canister for the Jetboil. They're so efficient.
Yeah. Okay. And that, because I mean, all it's really going to do is a couple cups of coffee in the morning and then boil water at night. So it shouldn't really take a lot of fuel.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll be more than fine. So
yeah, you'll do 6, 7, 8 days off of one small canister with that Jetboil.
And then let's see. Oh, the other thing that wasn't on there, again, I'm sure it's just an oversight, man. You have it together is just water. So water treatment, water storage, what's that system looking like for you?
Yep. So I have two systems. Haven't fully decided which one to go with yet. So I've got a Sawyer squeeze and a couple of, I think they're 2 liter bags. One will be a dirty bag. One will be a clean bag and we'll go that route. And then, you know, a Nalgene bottle. And I've also got a SteriPen that, it works really good. I've used it many times at just testing it out, getting some nasty water and I haven't gotten sick yet. So that thing works really good, but I'm really thinking that Sawyer squeeze will probably be the one that I end up taking.
Good call.
Yeah, because I mean, even though that water's drinkable, it doesn't mean it's filtered and tastes good. So
right.
I think that Sawyer squeeze is going to be the way to go. And that SteriPen would work great in emergency, you know, if you had to have it. And but
yeah, one more thing that you got to have a battery with.
Yeah,
just like, that could especially break. When the Sawyer works so stinking well, I just don't see the upside of that.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's the one. I got that right before before I deployed down here. And so I haven't really messed with it yet. I haven't. In fact, I don't even think I've taken it out of the package. So we'll see when I go home. I mean, I'm certain it's going to go, and it's not like it's a complicated system to try to learn how to use. So should be good.
Oh, the only other thing, again, this is just something I didn't see. I'm sure it's in there, is just fire. So some sort of fire method, whether that's a combination of fire, waterproof, you know, matches, some sort of tinder, all that good stuff. But I just didn't see it explicitly listed, so I wanted to make sure it wasn't an oversight there. And then you obviously have all your other good stuff in terms of teepee and wipes and your extras there, the extra batteries, an extra headlamp. That's, you know, I typically don't pack one as long as I have the extra power. It's pretty rare that a decent headlamp's going to fail or that you'll crush it or something like that. But I can certainly see how an extra light source has its place. I think just for me personally, in the crazy scenario that I truly busted it, at least on this hunt, you're not solo. So you have your buddy. And then B, worst comes to worst, you can fire up that iPhone flashlight for a little bit, at least have some sort of light. So the extra headlamp's a little bit, maybe debatable on that one. And then have your camera gear. You know, it looks like you have several options there. So again, that's just partially, that's just preference, right? Like how much footage do you want? What quality of footage do you want? Obviously, if you drop the tripod and spotter, you can drop your phone scopes. You're saving a bit more there. So yeah, that's kind of the big stuff. We can kind of conclude with the category of the things you want. But anything else before we move on to that, Steve, that stuck out to you from the list?
No, not really. Yeah. It's not too far off for sure.
Yeah, no, it's good. Yeah, it's good. Yeah. So under stuff you want, you had a communications device. I'm assuming you mean something like an inReach or Spot or something like that, right?
Yep. And that's something that I wanted to ask you guys and talk to you about, because I think I heard on your Death Hike podcast, you were talking about the new, is it the inReach Mini?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know which combo device to get. I was wanting an inReach, and then there's this new Spot X that just came out, and then the inReach Mini. So there's several options there, and I'm just kind of curious which one would be the best route to go.
Yeah, I'd go, I mean, if you're super familiar with your phone and running apps and Bluetooth syncing back and forth, I'd go with the inReach Mini. Like if it was my dad who's 65 years old and not super techy at all, I'd get him a regular inReach just because that device works really well on its own. But if you're good with the phone, you're good at understanding, just operating the phone, put it in airplane mode and conserving battery life, that there's basically how I've used my inReach the last 4 years is 100% on my phone. It just Bluetooth over, you open the EarthMate app and that's it. So to me, there's absolutely zero downside to the Mini, and it's cheaper to buy right up front, as well as, 3.5 ounces. So it's a couple, 2-3 ounces lighter than the regular inReach.
Okay.
Cool. The Spot X is brand new. I think reviews are still yet to be determined on it. So hard to argue with inReach being, it's just been around for a little bit longer, and they got everything dialed in on that device.
Yeah. Okay. So that you're saying that syncs to your phone, and then you just type your messages or do whatever you need to, and it sends it like a, like basically it's just a little satellite. It connects to satellite.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. And you don't do the preset messages like the old Spot where you only get like 10 presets.
Well, inside of the inReach, there's different plans that you can do. They all cost more or less, right? Like I think the base plan's $14.95 a month, I think. And you could send up to 10 custom messages and like unlimited preset messages. So if you want to like go in and pre-program, hey, honey, everything's great. I'll call you 2 days or whatever. You can pre-program that in, and then those are like unlimited, I believe. But then you can also, for like $70 a month, and you can change this by month, you can just do unlimited messaging. So there's different ways to go about it within inReach. It's kind of, it's simple, but also a little complicated. But yeah, you basically turn your cell phone on, open the EarthMate app, and then from there, you're just like, it's just like texting on your phone. Yeah, except it's through a different software than like your normal text message.
Okay. Awesome. That's definitely going to be worth a look then.
Yeah. So,
cool. Okay.
Good. I would highly, of all the things on your list or things you want to buy or things you could upgrade, I would definitely get that.
And yeah, that one.
Especially if you have family at home that you want to communicate with and let them know that everything's okay, or it's your guys' first backpacking trip into high elevation. There's a chance something could go wrong, a higher chance than 10 years from now when you have more experience. So I think it's invaluable to have.
So the on all that stuff I want that I've got listed there, most of that is for next year. But that combo device is going to happen this year before we go out. So probably as soon as I get home, that'll be one thing I really start shopping for. So yeah. And then the rest is just upgrades and just, whatever, comfort or not comfort, but just things that I've been looking at.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think just to prioritize that a little bit further, I totally agree on the communications device being basically as soon as you can do it. And then from there, I mean, you have things listed like a new pack, camera gear, rain gear, quilt sleeping bag, new puffy tripod head. I would prioritize out of everything else, aside from working for a pack company, I would say quilt and sleeping bag is going to be a huge area where you're going to be able to save 2+ pounds quickly, and probably be way more comfortable at the same time. So I'd put that near the top of the list. And you know, the other stuff's personal, like a puffy, you need to have one that is going to work well. Even the one you specifically have mentioned, the Cirrus Puffy from First Light. If you're primarily sticking with September stuff, I would even go lighter than that on the Puffy. I think that's going to be a bit warm for a lot of September stuff. Pack is a whole different discussion. We can have a whole different day. And then things like rain gear. I mean, you know, you're using Frog Tog stuff, their ultralight kit, which is, you know, it's rain gear. It really look at it when it comes to rain gear in terms of cost and performance. Like there's a clear difference in function of something like high quality First Light rain gear versus Frog Togs. At the same time, begin to understand at what point does that performance difference make a difference for you personally in terms of budget.
Right.
So yeah, it's definitely worth, and this is something I still do to this day of like, here's a list of stuff I want. What do I actually, like, what's going to make the biggest difference? What do I need? What's going to actually matter versus just wanting cooler stuff?
Yeah. With the rain gear, I'm just kind of guessing that Frog Tog was going to be okay for this year. Our intent, like we talked about yesterday, was if it starts raining on us, we're not planning on gearing up and hammering up the side of a mountain. We're going to take, you know, we'll throw some rain gear on and sit and wait the storm out is kind of the plan. So, and that stuff doesn't breathe very well. So I know it gets really hot, but I think if we're just sitting, we'll be okay. So someday we'll upgrade it one of these days and get into a better quality stuff. But
yeah, I mean, we, for September, I'd say 95% of the time, don't even pack rain gear. And if it does, you know, if there is a chance of a rainstorm coming, I'll throw my shelter up really quick. I'll go find some, you know, good thick trees to sit underneath and yeah, just wait it out for an hour. Or even if it's going to rain for an hour, I'll just hike in my lightest layer, let that get wet. And then the sun will come out a little bit later and dry, you know, I can just take it off, hang it off the back of my pack, hang it on a tree. It'll dry out fast and wear my other clothes. So, definitely got some options there. The only time I worry about rain is when I know it's, you know, 100% chance it's going to rain for a couple days straight. Then you got to start addressing it, especially at least in September when you're going to have those 60, 70 degree afternoons where it's going to be unbelievably hot and uncomfortable for you.
Yeah. And that's like Mark said earlier too, that rain gear might be one of the things that sits in the bin back in the truck. So
yeah.
Cool. Very cool. I think that's about all my gear. So
sweet, man. Is there any other questions, stuff you're dying to ping us on, I guess, before we wrap it up?
Oh gosh, we could probably go on forever.
I know, we could start a whole new show, right?
Yeah, right. No, I think we're good. You guys gave me some really, really good ideas and options on shedding weight, and that tripod and that spotter, that's coming out of there for sure. Like I said, I'm not out sheep hunting, bear hunting, anything like that. So, I think that's 6 to 8 pounds. And then, some of the other base layer stuff will come out too. So, I appreciate it. That was pretty awesome. Hopefully not just me, but other people can take away some stuff too from this.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you're cool with it, what we'll do is basically just, we'll put the list up and then maybe some notes. And then what we can do is, you know, cross-reference like this list versus, you know, Steve or I's list. And you'll just kind of see some of the differences on extras and things like that. So it just might be helpful for people to see things side by side. But I would say overall, like your approach is solid and it probably looks super, super dang close to what I had year one in terms of those same extras. Is not it was just things that I picked up along the way. Like, okay, that as actually is extra. Like, I don't need this and this and that, you know? And sometimes it's hard to see that or understand that in the beginning. So it's just all part of the process.
Yep. We've got a lot to learn, and we'll see. I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun little journey. So
yeah.
Heck yeah. It's all about the adventure. I think we, I think Lenny and I learned that from our first Alaska hunt. It was like prioritize having fun and making sure it's a really good adventure over, you know, trying to come home with a trophy animal. I think in the long run, you're going to have a blast.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can get so wrapped up in wanting to do it right, whatever that is, that you just forget to enjoy it. And as you guys just said, just go enjoy it and don't worry about whether you're doing it right or wrong. Just go, heck yeah, I'm doing it, you know?
Yeah, that's the whole intent. And that's where it all started was, like I said, all I really wanted to do was just sit on the top of the mountain and have a cup of coffee and hopefully get a critter. So ultimately, like I said, I'm going to take something away from it, regardless if it's a cooler full of meat or just lessons learned. There'll be something.
Well, that's a wrap on this one, guys. As always, thanks for tuning in. Don't forget, we want to see what's in your pack. Head to exomountaingear.com/inmyexo to get entered to win those prizes. Have any questions, anything like that, just shoot us an email, podcast@exomountaingear.com. Catch you next week.